Well, welcome to another episode of Mad Dog and Merrill's little podcast. We're having a great time. We've had some great guests so far.
I love it. I'll tell you, it's great. We got more great guests coming on. We got great guests today. It's exciting. It really is.
It really, really is. You know, Merrill and I have been involved with grilling. We've seen, like we always mentioned, the evolution of the grill industry in the last 40 years. And everybody asks us, you know, they ask me, you know, what's my favorite smoking recipe? What's my favorite this? What's my this? You ever been a competitor? You ever been, you know, you and I have never competed.
No.
In anything.
I don't want to lose, man.
I don't want to lose. I don't want to spend the money. You know, we're good friends with the Wisconsin Barbecue Posse, and just in general, they're the clique of people that we know that do competitions.
Right. Yeah.
And they spend a lot of time, they spend a lot of money, a lot of effort. You know, they wait for the judge's opinion of that particular event of who's good and who's bad at that particular time.
Yeah.
It's just not us.
Well, no, it's not. You know, I mean, it's a thing that, I mean, people that are really into the competition, they're really into it. It's a very expensive competition to get involved with, first of all, on it. And I'm just not that type to really be critical of what I'm cooking. If I like how I, you know, the big thing that I don't like is that how they do it in competition, I don't want my ribs that way.
Well, exactly right. The way the judges don't want it slobbered with barbecue sauce. Yeah. I'm sorry, I like it slobbered with barbecue sauce. And I'm sorry, I like my ribs pulled apart where they fall apart because that's the way I like to eat them.
Right.
I like
a
greasy little piece of rib.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and God love the folks that smoke them for 6 hours, don't wrap them, don't do nothing with them, and they're just a nice pull apart and they're delicious back of ribs. I love those too, but I don't want to get that good.
No, I don't. I mean, I like the experimenting with, especially with the ribs. I've done ribs so many different ways. I've got my own technique how I like to do it, but it would never pass in competition.
No. But you know what? I think I'd do some, I could smoke some damn good chicken. I could do briskets if I wanted to, pork shoulders. You and I could get by. And there's competitors out there that get by without ever winning a damn award in their lives.
Yeah.
But yet they have fun at it and they're part of it. And that's all that matters. You're part of it. So it's a neat little family. It's a neat little event. And it's a great way to spend a weekend for certain people. And they have a great time.
Yeah. And, you know, another thing I would too is a lot of the people all of a sudden get burnt out on the whole thing too. They find out that, geez, I'm working every weekend. Their families are not with their families.
And they're doing gung-ho.
Yeah, there's some families that are involved in the competition.
Yep.
Which is great. But a lot of them find out, geez, I'm spending all this money. You know, what I'm going to get. But I'll tell you what, like, you know, we mentioned before, we've been to the Kansas City Royal, you know, Memphis in May. And you see that competition, it's great.
Yep, oh, they're having a great time.
You have those ribs and things and seeing the competition, it is awesome.
They're underneath the highway viaduct and the traffic's roaring by. They're sitting on gravel and they're having a great time. They're out in nature. Anyway, it's not our style. We did get a nice little award one time from the Wisconsin Barbecue Posse. We got a called the Wall of Flame.
Yeah. We're in the Wall of Flame.
The Wall of Flame Award, which is separate from the Wall of Fame.
Right.
Which the true competitors, which our next guest, Dr. Lampe, Dr. Barbecue Ray Lampe, our next guest, has actually been inducted into the
Barbecue Hall of Fame.
Barbecue Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And God love him for that. And he's done over like 300 competitions. He's gotten 300 awards. And, he's been in the business for almost as long as you and I.
Right, exactly.
And he's a great guy.
Oh, he is. He's fantastic. Easy going. I'll talk to anybody. He's really into the whole barbecue thing. And
What? There's one way to find out. Let's take a little break and we'll be right back. Yeah. We'll have Dr. Barbecue Ray Lampe out of St. Petersburg, Florida.
You got it, sir.
Out of St. Petersburg, Florida. Yeah. He'll be all the way from there, talking where it's 91 degrees today and sunshine.
Yeah, I know. Look, a little buzzard.
I know.
Louisiana Grills presents Mad Dog and Merrill's Midwest Grillin' Podcast. Brought to you by Louisiana Grills and Smokers, Pit Boss Grills, America's Pork Producers, Healthy Homegrown Wisconsin Potatoes, Sundrop Soda, Awesome Shrimp and Seafood, Shooting Star Casino, and by Cherry Delight.
For those who want the best, look no further than the Founders Series by Louisiana Grills. Distinguished grilling machines designed to raise the standard of your backyard culinary experience. The Founder Series beautifully combines the legacy of pellet grilling with the technology of today. If you want the best food, then you need the best grill. The Founder Series delivers robust versatility that enhances the sophistication of grilling with products worthy of the modern outdoor chef.
Welcome to summer. You're staying active, so turn to pork to fuel the fun. It brings the balanced nutrition you need with a burst of flavor you love. So bike on, hike on, golf on, grill on. Pork's got your summer covered. 100% fresh, 100% real pork.
Cherry Delight dried cherries provide a healthy snack and taste delicious. These tasty fruit snacks provide essential nutrients and vitamins. From chocolate-covered Cherry Delights to tart cherry juice, these snacks are full of nutrition. Order online at countryovens.com.
Well, you know, when we're on a podcast, we're all friends, aren't we?
Exactly. Well, I'll always be friends with you guys.
Yeah. You know, Meryl and I were just chatting a little bit, and one thing we didn't talk about was, you know, we had a two-hour talk radio show for 5 years, and I hate to say it, but you were our fallback guy. Whenever we didn't have a damn guest, let's call Ray Lampe.
I'm a lot of guys' fallback guy. I get on a lot of shows like that. I'm kind of like, you're like when you buy the remnant space in the magazine that nobody else wanted, I'm that guy.
Exactly. Well, you're it today, Ray, and we do thank you.
I made a career out of it. I mean, this is going well.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, exactly.
You know, your career has expanded. You know, we've been doing it about 41, 42 years, Meryl and I, and you're darn near into your 40th year. Is that true?
It'll be 40 years in September, actually.
Okay.
So I'm kind of a young guy compared to you guys.
Yeah, boy, I guess. Boy, and you're even keeping track of it. That's pretty dang good.
No, you know, it's interesting. I'll be happy to tell you the story on the podcast, but I went to this first Mike Royko Rib Fest in Chicago in 1982, and the other guy that went that same day and started his barbecue career is Dave Raymond, who created Sweet Baby Ray's.
Right, yeah.
And Dave knows the date. That's the only reason I know it.
Isn't that funny? Yeah, back in 82, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and we tell people we've seen the evolution of the grill industry.
Yeah, that's for sure. And the embracing of it, you know, I mean, you guys know how hard it was back then. People didn't take it that seriously. Okay, I might have a grill, but I pull it out on Memorial Day, even in Wisconsin. You know, it was a holiday thing, and man, it's come a long way.
It certainly has, you know, and technology in the grill industry has come a long ways. Can you remember the first? Now, did you start out as a grillologist, or did you always do a smoke box type cooking?
I started with, well, smoking, I guess, because it was ribs.
Sure.
I knew how to cook. I didn't know how to cook barbecue. I went to that barbecue cook-up. A buddy of mine signed us up, and I was the only guy, we were 20-some-year-old guys, I was the only one who knew how to cook. So I bought some ribs and borrowed a Weber kettle.
Yep.
So I guess, you know, I started out as a smoker, technically, more than a grilling guy. But you know, the two mashed together. They certainly did along the way. It was funny. I did an interview yesterday. Once again, they couldn't find anybody else.
Exactly.
And the girl said she wanted me to, you know, explain the difference between grilling and smoking. She said, I've written up what I think I know, and my husband is a smoker, so I think what he knows. And it was interesting to me because think about it. 20 years ago, 30 years ago, trying to explain that to people, they had no clue. Now it's pretty, it took us 40 years to get the word out, but I think we got it.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, it's amazing. Sure. You know, my license plate for 38 years has said, I barbecue.
Right.
But yet, Meryl and I consider ourselves grillologists. You know, we've never been in a competition for smoking cuts of meat. You know, we've got the beautiful Louisiana smokers and the Pit Boss smokers, the pellet grills.
That's good suck up, man, Doug.
Yeah, I know, exactly right. Yeah, what I like about it is written in the article that the good family who owns those folks did, they said credibility, they're talking about you now, of course, the ambassador to Louisiana Grills, Mr. Ray Lampe, Dr. Barbecue, credibility, quality, authenticity. And then there's Mad Dog and Merrill.
hey, somebody's got to be at the top of the list, you
That's
know?
True. Come on. That's true.
You know, I remember one of the first times, this is back in the St. Paul with the Grill Fest there.
Oh, where, yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah.
You were there, we were there. It was a shitty-ass weekend. It was raining, it was snowing, it was windy, whatever it was. And we did the presentation first, and Merrill and I get up on stage, and we do this horse and pony show, making people laugh and joking, and old-time vaudeville jokes. And you look at us, and you get up on stage and start doing the best barbecue demonstration. Now, to this day, you know, it's so simplified what we do and you do, but it's showing people, take a rack of ribs, just smoke it. If you want to wrap it up, I can remember to this day, you put a little honey on top, you put a little apple juice on top, you wrapped it up, you put it on the grill, and you told people that's how you do it.
I can see that one.
What's that?
I'm still milking that one. I still use that one.
I know you are. That's how easy it is, though.
I'm still doing the same act.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's all about. You know, when you look at it, you're still, you know, educating people, you know, all the time for it, too. So.
Well, we've been so lucky, you know, all of us, though, because it's come to us. If it hadn't gotten so much more popular, we couldn't be still doing it and making a living. I mean, my rent is paid this month. We'll see about next month, but, you know, it's the nature of it.
Yeah. You know, we received a little Wisconsin Barbecue Posse up here. Our good friend Tim and Jeff and all the good gangs that belong to the Wisconsin Barbecue Posse, they presented us 3 years ago, 4 years ago, three years ago with a nice award called the Wall of Flame. And it was a recipient, and people who get them are locally been in the business a while. They've done some special things. They've done some special events and won some awards along the way. And we received that particular award not just because we were good at what we did. It's just because we inspired so many people along the way to get involved with grilling. And then I guess that's what we do along the way.
It's interesting to look back. I feel the same way about you guys and myself. It's interesting to look back and see how far it has come. I mean, like I said about the difference between smoking and grilling. Well, people truly didn't know that. And hey, guys, we all get credit for helping spread that message, you know. And think about some of the things. How many people have you guys inspired to cook some brats before the game?
Exactly. Honest to God.
Johnsonville ought to put you in their Hall of Fame.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, you know my favorite is that they brought us in to teach classes at the Kansas City Royal. And we did a class, and afterwards we served a bratwurst. I'll tell you what, you thought we were serving prime rib. They were just going nuts over it, you know? We just browned them up and put them in a beer bath, and everybody's just going crazy over the thing, you know?
I hear you, man. Yeah. But like I said, there's so much more advanced now. Now it's all, you get all these technical questions because of, do you guys ever talk to Meathead? Do you ever talk to him, the amazing ribs guy?
No, I never have.
He's an interesting guy, but he's kind of like became the Alton Brown of it. You know, we're wasting all the good stuff before the podcast here, guys.
Well, what was that now?
We're wasting all the good stuff. We're not recording yet, are we?
Oh, yeah, we sure are. Yeah, yeah. We're 9 minutes into it, man.
Oh, good. I was saving the good stuff.
You keep going. No, the good stuff started when we started the bullshit in the beginning. All of a sudden, Rod goes, "We're rolling." I said, "Good." Oh, no,
yeah,
man.
That's why Rod's around. That's why we need Rod.
Yeah. This is it, man.
Exactly.
I forgot what I was talking about. It was something really good, though.
The ribmaster.
The meat guy.
The meat guy.
Meathead.
Meathead. Yeah. So Meathead has taken the approach of like being about the science of this. And sometimes it's a buzz killer because it's like, I don't really want to know all of that. On the other hand, man, he has found the niche that people are into it. They're so much more into the technical stuff of it because they're guys, I think, mostly, and they want it to be a science project, you know, instead of actual art, which is what cooking is. But Meathead, it changed everything. So now you get these questions about the stall. Everybody knows about the stall. I cooked so many pork butts and briskets before I knew there was a stall because I didn't care. I just wanted it to be done so I could eat it.
I know. You know, as we travel, and that's absolutely true. You know, and I don't know what brings it about. If it's the apps on the phone, if it's just people are getting more technical, the younger ones growing up are getting technical and they want to be, you know, like a science project type of thing. But you're absolutely right. It's like, You know, I was telling Meryl before we had you on, is I can smoke some of the best chicken in the world, the thighs in the world and everything else. How I did it, I didn't write it down. I should have wrote it down. I should have wrote the rub down. I should have did this. But every time you do it, it's different. Is that the same with competition, by the way, Ray? Do you know what you're doing every time?
Well, in my day, we didn't. We didn't know. We were making it up. I always say that I was like, we were the test pilots. You know, we were, when I showed up, you came to the cook-off with a cooler of beer and a cooler of food, and you cooked the food and you drank the beer, and whatever happened. You know, you definitely could change your plan in the middle of the day. If somebody handed you a new bottle of barbecue sauce, you'd be like, hell yeah, I'm putting this on my chicken today. And now, no way. The new guys, I call them technicians. I went to my first cook-off in 6 years a month or two ago and completely got my ass kicked because it's just hard. These guys are so good at it now. You can't just show up and do it. And I made the mistake of trying to do some of the more technical things that they do now without practicing, of course, because I didn't want to put any effort in.
No, shit.
You know, that was too much trouble. And back then, yeah, for sure, it was always an experiment. Everybody was doing something different. But then there came along these guys. It was a guy named Mike Scrutchfield is the one I remember being the first one that he really took this approach of trying to manipulate the judges. Instead of just turning in what he thought was a pretty good slab of ribs, he was like, how can I get that judge to write down a 9 when he's eaten this? And so it started really with his presentation. We would just put some lettuce in the box because that was what you could use as lettuce.
Sure. Yep.
And lay the meat on top of it. Well, Mike started figuring out a way to kind of create the lettuce in a really nice fashion and make sure you laid everything in there perfectly and clean the box up. And then the next level was guys started making what we call like a putting green out of parsley, because parsley was legal, but we would put lettuce, put the meat, and use the parsley to kind of fill in the holes. Somebody had the idea one day to do the whole box in parsley. It was beautiful. It looked like a putting green. But man, you want to talk about a hassle to do. You literally would have to bring a case of parsley to the cook-off. And somebody had to spend hours in there washing and making these boxes. But did it look great when the judge opened that box? Did it look better than mine laying on the lettuce? Yeah, hell yeah, it did. You know, and then like the chicken thighs, you could use any part of the chicken. Actually, the trophy, I got one trophy in my office, and it's from 1991, and it's for third place in poultry out in West Chicago at my first KCBS contest, and it's for a turkey. Because back then, it's so different now. Back then, you could cook anything. You could have cooked quail, duck, turkey, chicken, didn't matter. And I cooked a turkey and got third place that day. And now now we're getting turkey back into the fold, and hopefully it's going to become the fifth category pretty soon.
Oh, yeah.
One of my other many projects, but back then it was just so different, you know. And the pork, the guy could decide whatever cut of pork he wanted. And little by little, they had to refine all those rules, which was a good thing.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's how far back I go and how different it was. So now they're busy making rules all the time to get guys to quit cheating, basically. you know, the evolution is for sure the thing.
Well, I just wanted to say, if you're the test pilot, we're the Wright brothers.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, there's not many people that started before me, so you guys are on a very short list.
So now you're involved with some turkey foundation or something? Smoked turkey or?
Yeah, the National Turkey Federation. There's actually two of them. One is for the hunters, wild turkeys, and the other one is it's a lobbying group in D.C. that basically their job is to help promote turkey, and they at all levels. So, of course, they're friends with Butterball and Honeysuckle White and Jenny O. But then there's also every guy that grows 10 turkeys in his backyard can be part of this. And then CryoVac, like some of the processing people. And they wanted to, you know, they always want to sell more turkey. So they had an idea that smoking turkey would be a way to sell more turkeys, and it's actually been really successful. So it's turkeysmoke.org is their website.
Yeah.
And they've had me be their spokesman for a few years. By being the older statesman, I can go hang out at the cook-off and everybody wants to talk to me. I can still cook a little bit, but then I can also go stand in front of their members and speak from a pretty experienced palate to tell them what I think they should do to sell more turkey in the smoker and grilling world. And so I've been kind of a good fit in that world too. So yeah, one of my many jobs, you know, they're not, it's, I got friends that are now, you know, 40 years in corporate world and now they're on boards and they fly around the country and get paid a lot of money. It's kind of like that, except for the money.
Exactly. So when you did, and I had one question on the turkey. So was that like a portion? Was that the thighs? Was that the whole turkey you won the award on? Or
it was a whole turkey.
Hell yeah.
I had seen the Frugal Gourmet, which taught me a lot about cooking.
Sure.
You know, his life ended pretty weirdly, but he took a turkey and he injected it with sherry, cooking sherry and butter. Not cooking sherry, just cheap sherry, like we would drink, and butter. And I was like, well, that's a really good idea. I wonder how that would go on the grill. So I put it on the grill and cooked one of those, and it was really good. So that was like my secret recipe. And I had done the Mike Royko Rib Fest for 10 years in Chicago, and they quit having it. So I was bummed because it was my once-a-year party and barbecue thing. And I happened to see, this is how old we are, in the newspaper, there was a little blurb about the Illinois State Barbecue Championship. And, you know, they didn't have a website or anything. You guys understand. I'm sure not that
old. Oh, yeah.
They don't understand.
Yeah.
You had to actually call the guy and talk to him. And so I didn't really get all the info that I might have. So I didn't know I was supposed to cook all the categories. I thought I was supposed to pick one. So I picked poultry and I cooked that turkey and went there. And then I learned that, like, the guys around me had gotten more info and had cooked briskets and pork shoulders and ribs as well. But I didn't know how to cook a brisket. I wouldn't know where to find one back then. So it's probably best that I only cooked that. But yeah, that was, it was a whole turkey, and I sliced it and put it in the box. I mean, if I turn that in now, I'd come in last place. I guarantee it.
Right?
It's just so different.
Yeah. But that's it. Things have changed. Things have changed and everything. I mean, let's go back to the evolution of the grill industry. I mean, it's amazing. We've been on the road. We were on the road 7 weeks this last Christmas time. Since Christmas, on the road about 8 weeks to different home and garden shows, sports shows, and everywhere we go, people do watch our television show, and it's kind of nice. They come up, they chat a little bit. We ask them what they cook on, and I guarantee 80% of them said a pellet grill.
Right.
Yeah, it's such a hot category right now.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
Yeah, just amazing.
So what's your thinking? And I realize that you're involved with the Louisiana Grill, but what's your thinking of the whole coming from, not putting you on the spot, from the Green Egg to the pellet grill?
Okay.
But what's your feeling on the whole thing? Getting the same taste, the same flavor?
It's interesting to look at the whole thing. You know, I mean, I've been cooking on pellet grills forever. Fast Eddie's my buddy, and he's been pushing them longer, and I've been cooking barbecue, and so it's nothing that new to me. I always had one. I just didn't talk about it much, to be honest.
Yeah. You weren't paid to.
Right. Well, you know, you hate to be like that, but it's more loyalty to me. I take the money. You got to have the money, but it's more loyalty. If you are paying me and I have signed on to be on your team, I'm all in. You know, I mean, that's how it should work.
Yep,
I have a hard time with these. Well, we'll get to this, I'm sure, somewhere in this conversation about the ambassadors and all of this stuff where you also get to promote five different things at the same time. I don't understand that sometimes.
Yeah, like turkeys.
I'm down to three.
Yeah, I know. Keep going. We got a couple more to go. Keep going.
It seems like the right amount.
Yeah.
Anyway, one of the things I say now, so, you know, it could be an awkward transition. For 17 years, I was the big Green Egg guy, and I spoke, and that's what I cooked on, and it's what I talked about. And it was all genuine, and it still is. But what happened was, this is also what I do for a living. The Big Green Egg for all those years was the cool kid grill. I mean, there's no question. You guys know you worked with him a little bit here and there.
Yep.
And I mean, anywhere you went, that's what people wanted to talk about, man. It was the cool kid grill. And we were lucky to be part of that whole thing. And we all do get credit for it, too. I mean, it was a skyrocket. It's not anymore.
No.
Kamados have found their place in the world of grilling. They ain't going nowhere, that's for sure. But it's no longer the cool kid grill, I don't think.
No.
What's the cool kid grill now?
It's a pellet grill.
Pellet grills, no question about it. So, and now we're on the one that, you know, the Louisiana Grills is the one to me that's poised to become the next big thing in that category. So I feel really blessed to have gone from one of the cool kid grills to the new cool kid grill. Right. Is how I think of it.
Yeah, they're heavy, aren't they? I got a 1200. I got a 1200. Merrill's got an 800. Rod and I tried to lift an 800 up on the stage to do a television shoot about a month and a half ago. We had to go get a set of ramps to wheel that son of a bitch up. It's just a well-built, sturdy grill.
20 years ago, you could have done it, Mad Dog.
Yeah, no, you know something? I'm actually stronger right now than I was 20 years ago. I've been lifting weights for about 5 years, and he and I really? Could not lift that son of a bitch up on that stage.
No, I really like him for promoting it that way because it makes it easy. When someone walks up to the grill, like I've been to a couple trade shows recently, you just tell them, hey, grab that lid and open it up, and it's impressive compared to some of the competitors.
It is. Definitely. It's like the old Green Egg when you said, lift that hood of that ceramic grill. You know, that dang thing was heavy. And so is the Louisiana.
Especially in this day and age where because everything ships from overseas and ships all around the country right to your house, a lot of people try to lighten things up for obvious reasons.
Right.
And boy, they've taken the opposite approach with these things. But I think it makes it, they're also going to last, man. There's nothing that feels flimsy about them. I've got the 1200 in my backyard as well.
Yep.
And man, that thing is beautiful. The reaction, have you guys taken it out anywhere yet?
Still have your restaurant?
I do. I was there this morning.
Yeah, good for you.
Yeah,
good for you.
About that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys got to come see me sometime.
Are you still married? Are you still married?
Well, I never really got married. I'm still with Sandy.
Oh, I thought you got married. I'm sorry. I thought you really got married.
I always say wife just because it's easier than trying to explain.
Well, I've been with Lori for 30 years. She gets mad if we're there together. I don't say wife. I say soul partner. But when I explain it to someone, she's my wife.
It's just easier. And
when
you get old, though, it's almost like a business decision. You know, Sandy had a whole life before I showed up and vice versa. And, and I also got that whole entrepreneur thing we talked about, which stability is not always part of that.
No, exactly. Like, it's great, ain't it? It's one step away from homelessness.
Yeah,
it's really great. It's really fun.
That's what a buddy of mine said the other day. He's like, I could still screw this up. And I was like, yeah, I guess I'm familiar with that.
By the way, ladies, if you're just, you're not just tuning in, obviously, but we have a good friend of ours, Ray Lampe, Dr. Barbecue, and let's pinpoint a couple little things. I've had a few of your cookbooks along the way, and you have, I believe, 9 of them under your belt, your Dunlaps. 9 books. I call them little Bibles because every little section is separate from the next section. It's not like a chapter. It's more like little psalms. I love your books is what I'm trying to say.
Thank you, man. Dog, I appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, they're great. I mean, I know you've heard it before, but it's good bathroom reading material, too.
That's the ultimate compliment.
Yeah, no, but I mean, the books are just great.
Well, I think I had the advantage of not being a trained writer. You know, I moved down here to Florida 21-22 years ago to become a barbecue guy. I had a good business in Chicago for years, and it was just over, time to move on. I moved down here, so I was like the original food truck guy, and of course I wasn't making any money doing that, so I was like trying to figure out what is the plan then, what do I do? So I was trying everything, and a friend of mine started a barbecue magazine up in Iowa, a guy named Bruce Ring, and so I called Bruce and I said, hey, I want to write the Ask Dr. Barbecue column. He goes, yeah, sure, what the hell? He goes, I'll pay you when I can, and Bruce, he paid me when he could. It was exactly that.
Exactly.
But he bought me my first chef jackets that had the flames on the collars and cuffs, and I still have some of them things. I still wear them. Actually, that's the jacket. The Barbecue Hall of Fame asks you for a memento, so if they ever actually have a museum, they'll put it in there. And I gave him one of those chef jackets because it kind of became my thing over the years. But anyway, Bruce sold the magazine, and I didn't know what to do. Ask Dr. Barbecue. The internet was starting to, it was kind of online, you know, back when nothing really was happening. And so somebody introduced me to Dave DeWitt from the Fiery Food Show out in Albuquerque. And Dave said, yeah, I need some more barbecue content for my magazine, which was Fiery Foods. So I started writing for Dave, the Ask Dr. Barbecue column. And he paid me, you know, a little bit of money back then. But Dave has written, well, now he's probably written 60 cookbooks, but he had written like 30 cookbooks. So an opportunity came up, and he called me one day, and he said, Ray, I've got this opportunity to write some barbecue cookbooks, and I can't do it because he was writing the Spicy Food Lover's Bible. And he said, but I think you'd be perfect to do it. I said, well, Dave, I'll give it a shot, but I've never written a cookbook. He goes, I think you can write. And I'd just gotten comfortable with my computer. I mean, this is a long time ago.
Yeah.
And he said, the agent comes with the deal, though. And I was like, you know, I'm sitting here in a parking lot in Florida trying to scratch out a living selling sandwiches. an agent, yeah, I'm in. I'm not going to say no. So he connects me with the agent, who I still use if I have projects that are fit. And anyway, they asked me to write a cookbook with a major publisher in New York, and I didn't know what I was doing. Dave actually co-wrote it with me to make sure I could do it. We got done. He's like, Ray, you can do this. You're a natural writer. But I didn't have the baggage of someone having trained me how to structure a book. I structured every one of my books however I felt like it. And luckily, the publishers kind of liked it. They thought it was something, you know, unique. So that's why I think they feel different, because they don't fit that same format that, like, you guys ever meet, Steve Raiklin, of course. Sure. Steven's like the ultimate cookbook author. Jamie Provine. You ever meet Jamie that wrote all the Weber books?
Right, exactly.
Jamie was, you know, is a writer first, and then he plugged into Weber and writing those things. And I was not that. So I think that's why my books feel so different. And someone once gave me the greatest compliment ever, and I didn't even know it. They said, when you write as you speak, if I read your writing, it reads like I'm talking to you. And apparently that's just a gift, because most guys can't do it, and I didn't even know it. So, like so many things in my life, I just kind of got lucky and was in the right place at the right time and sucked it up and did it. You know, that's the other thing about being an entrepreneur. You can't ever say, I can't do that. You say yes, and then you figure it out.
Right, exactly.
Well, then that's exactly what it is. If you don't do it, you don't try. And if you don't try, you're not an entrepreneur.
Yeah, then yeah. You should just get a job and go work for somebody else.
Oh, my God, a paycheck, yeah. Oh, shoot. Then you have to keep track of every penny that comes out of that paycheck, and that ain't us.
Plus, I'd get fired the first day.
You wouldn't get, Merrill wouldn't get hired.
I came to that point, and when I moved down here, I knew I could survive for 3-4 years with the money I had and what I was scratching out, and it was a little bit longer than that. But I was really getting to the end of the rope. All my credit cards were maxed out, and I wasn't making enough money to keep paying my bills. And I was like, holy cow, I'm going to have to actually get a job. And much like you, I was like, I've been self-employed since I was 18 years old, man.
Yeah.
There was a whole 25 years of self-employment before this part. And I was like, oh, my God, what am I going to do? I couldn't even imagine going to work for somebody. Last real job I had was bagging groceries at the Dominick's food store in Chicago. Yeah. And it was in 1975.
I'll tell you what, 73, I was bagging groceries. I was moved up to checkout, though, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I hadn't quite made it there.
You know what happened is the boss's son and I got caught smoking pot in the back room.
Yeah, I can understand that part of it, too.
Yeah, oh well.
I got that old pot smoker myself. I'll say this. It sure is nice to see it get legal. I don't participate much anymore, but my God, man, how was that not legal 40 years ago?
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, just the tax.
So, Merrill, what was your last real job? I want to hear this.
Oh, my gosh, man. Well, I used to sell, believe it or not, I used to sell exclusive men's clothing, high-end clothing, the Johnny Carson suits and all this stuff. My wife says if she knew how I dressed today, there's no way in heck we'd ever get married, I had all the expensive suits and everything, so that was my line. Yes, the clothes salesman, suit salesman.
That's definitely a one-up from smoking pot behind the grocery store. Yeah.
I don't know. I know ours was more fun.
Exactly, for sure.
So as Dr. Barbecue, you have a nice little restaurant in St. Petersburg?
I have a big restaurant. Yeah. Man, I've actually avoided the restaurant business. So I worked for one other restaurant in my life in the early 2000s, probably 2005 or whatever it was. I got a call from a guy.
Justin Timberlake?
Yeah, Justin's buddy.
Yeah.
And they had opened a restaurant in New York because Justin's from Memphis, a barbecue restaurant. And they got a New York chef that told him he knew how to cook barbecue, and he had no clue, and they didn't know what to do. They had a line out the door. They were on Good Morning America with Justin at the restaurant, and they couldn't get any food out. So the guy calls me, and I was like, yeah, I'm good, man. I live in Florida. I don't really want to come to New York and do this. It just didn't sound good to me. It sounded like a mess. And so he kept poking at me, and because they really, the guy was in a bind, and all my people that I talked to were like, don't be stupid. You got to go at least talk to the guy. So I did. And the second day I was there helping them try to straighten this place out, they're like, hey, Ray, we got a photo shoot today, so make some food and get cleaned up. And so I do. I sit at the bar, and they take pictures of me for People magazine. A week later, I'm in People magazine. So that's my real restaurant experience. You know? I mean, I didn't know how to run restaurants, so I've always avoided it. And frankly, I saw, you know, a lot of people go broke in the business, and it just was not something I ever wanted to tackle. Now, so 4 years ago, I'm 60 years old. These people I know who have half dozen nice restaurants around St. Pete and Tampa call me and said, hey, Ray, we're thinking about doing a barbecue restaurant. Would you want to be part of that? And I said, well, now that's a different story, because now it's people that know how to run the restaurant. That's not going to be my job.
Right.
I'm actually working today on getting the labels ready, because we're going to start selling our barbecue sauce at retail. Those are the kind of projects I know how to do. I can keep these guys on track with what they're cooking. I can, you know, I can get out there and do PR. I'm on local TV all the time, but I don't know how to run a restaurant. So it was a perfect fit, and it got a little carried away. We were looking for 4,000 square feet. We ended up with over 9.
Wow.
There's 280 seats. There's a tiki bar, like a whole separate tiki bar. It's right across the street from Tropicana Field, where the Rays play, in the cool, like the coolest neighborhood in St. Pete. It went wild, the project, and it's still going well. Obviously, COVID has been, you know, been a nightmare for restaurants in general. But we've survived through it all, and we're doing pretty good. Business is good. Now it's just trying to get people to work, and that's pretty much a problem everywhere.
Yeah, it sure is, ain't it?
Have you got a great bourbon selection?
Well, it depends on the week. If they drink it all and we forget to order some more. You know, all that fancy bourbon these days is hard to get your hands on. So you really have to twist the distributor's arm to make sure you get some of it. But we do, yeah. Most weeks there's you can always find something you're going to want to drink in there. It's pretty good. Some weeks it's better than others. You never know. And they tell us our prices are good, because we basically put the margin on it that we would put on everything else. We don't say, well, this is very much in demand, we'll jack the price on the people. So I think people like that, and that's why it turns over too. But so when we're getting ready to open, the partner restaurant is in Tampa, and we're in St. Pete, two different counties. And so they get a bottle of 23-year-old Pappy Van Winkle, and they said, well, we'll save this and bring it to Dr. Barbecue when you open. It'll be a cool thing to have when you get started. So they do that, and the liquor distributor comes in immediately and says, where'd you get that? So we told them the story, and they said, well, you can't do that. It's a different county, a different distributor, different place. You can't. So we had to take the bottle back to Tampa.
Oh, no.
And they ended up sticking in the Roger, the owner, took it home, and it was just sitting at his bar at home. He hadn't opened it, and when COVID came, they sold it and put it for sale, because we were just, you know, it's almost like shtick to make some noise. We were raffling off our liquor and our bottles and stuff, and it was for sale for $20,000, and a guy paid us $40,000 for it just because he wanted to help us out. You know, I mean, it was really interesting to see, and I think a lot of restaurants have gotten a lot of angel help along the way, and we need it, frankly.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? Well, especially with 9,000 square feet.
Oh, it's huge. Yeah.
Yeah.
We got a little carried away.
And the name is called Dr. Barbecue, BBQ?
Yes. Yeah, in the beginning, we were going to name it. We talked about, like, naming it other things. And it was like, well, but why? You got my name. I've got the trademarks and everything. Why wouldn't we call it Dr. Barbecue if I'm going to be involved? But then we were going to be really cute. We decided it would be DRBBQ'S. So that would be completely different than Dr. Barbecue. And, of course, that didn't work. It was just totally confusing. So now we really, in regular world, we call it Dr. Barbecue the Restaurant, because it's the only way to keep them separate. But technically, it's Dr. Barbecue, and it's all one big pile.
And so, and I'm just gonna, it's another commercial plug here, but is there a website or Facebook people can go to for you good guys?
Yeah, the website is drbbqs.com.
There you go.
But if you go to my personal website, because I just haven't got around to cleaning it up, it forwards right to it anyway.
Okay.
And you're like now, you know, you don't even have to type that stuff in. Just Google Dr. Barbecue. And
exactly.
You'll find everything you ever wanted to know about me.
Yeah.
I even have a Wikipedia page. I didn't do it. Somebody did it.
So are you going to be on the Food Network? You got anything coming up with the Food Network?
I just did the Food Paradise show, which is actually on the Cooking Channel these days. Guy just does every show himself now on the Food Network.
Yeah, I know.
Nobody else sees it. And he's in every commercial as well. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, always looking to be on that stuff. I'm actually on a primetime show in Canada on the Food Network, but the Canada Food Network is like completely separate from regular Food Network in the U.S. So I'm on a show called Fire Masters up there. It's pretty cool. It's like Chopped with a big fire pit, and then they got all these grills around it as well. And it's kind of like Chopped, except the last round you cook against one of the judges. So I'm a judge.
Right.
So every now and then I gotta get down and cook the last round. And it's brutal, man. I'm getting pretty old for all of that. It's a lot of running around and stuff. And yeah, it's getting hard.
I hear you.
And if you're ever out and about and you think you might hear that voice and wonder who it is, just look at his wrist and see if he has a tattoo that says it's a watch that says 5 o'clock.
That's me.
It's Ray. It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
That was from my real career, my trucking career.
Right.
I was done and moving on, and I didn't want a real watch. Nobody was going to buy me one anyway, so I just figured I'd get a tattoo of a watch.
Yeah. Hey, let's reverse circles here and wrap her up in a couple seconds here. But let's talk about our as an ambassador, and Meryl and I are good friends, and we're. We've taped 3 television shows so far, and it's early on while we're taping this show, too. So we've taped many of them now so far. But our good friends at Louisiana Grill, we get the privilege of using some of the great accessories and the Pit Boss accessories also, which is the same family. Let's talk a little about Louisiana Grills. You're on Twitter, you're on Instagram, you're on Facebook. People can learn more about the Louisiana Grills that way.
Yeah, sure. I like to think we're doing a pretty good job right now of getting the word out there. We always got a long way to go because it is the old new brand. They used to all be Louisiana Grills, and then they divided it and made Pit Boss the mass market ones, and Louisiana
right.
Grills is the for the more exclusive stores. And like much like you, I kind of wander back and forth. But if you get a chance, take a look at these grills. I'll tell you, like you were talking about how heavy they are and well made. They got all the bells and whistles. Even the pizza stones. I was making some dessert pizzas last week at out in Las Vegas at a trade show, and the pizza stones have got little like handles built on them. Like instead of just making a round pizza stone, they make it really cool. Everything they do, their designers and engineers are doing a really good job. The stuff is just a next level to me compared to most of the stuff that's out there on the market. So I'm really excited about hanging out with them. It's a lot of fun. Yeah, so Louisiana Grills and Pit Boss, like you said, it overlaps. And heck, I'm not hard to find. I'm on all the social media. I'm not quite the. I'm even on TikTok. You won't see me like dancing in my underwear or anything. I hope anyway. You never know. But if you look for Dr. Barbecue, actually on Instagram, somebody had Dr. Barbecue, so I'm real Dr. Barbecue. But you know, Google's your friend. I'm not hard to find.
No, you're not. And you're a great guy, and you're knowledgeable in the business, and you're an ambassador to everything that comes along, that's for sure.
You know, I don't like that ambassador word, though.
I don't either.
I know.
So we just did it.
Ambassador means you don't get paid, and I don't like
that. Yeah, we just did this last year now. We just got through taping for Feeding America, which is a great, great organization, Feeding America. And they're calling us, and we're taking on the name Ambassadors to Feeding America this year. And it's a great cause. They serve thousands and thousands of people every day. The campuses, the warehouses just rotate food daily. But the word ambassador, it's unique, isn't it?
Well, I think it's gotten watered down. You know
exactly.
You know what it's been like with all the internet has blown up and everybody's a star, and it's fine. But you know, I try to explain to these people, if you're giving away the milk, nobody's going to buy the cow. It's a pretty old rule of way to do business.
Yep.
Boy, there's a whole lot of people giving the milk away these days.
Yeah. Well, you know, sure. If you get a chance, Ray, you know, I know you're a busy man, but out of Sarasota, and I think that's St. Petersburg Television, we our little Mad Dog and Merrill's Midwest Grilling airs about 4 to 6 times a week, if I'm not mistaken.
On what channel? On that ABC channel down there?
Oh, see, this is Rod's question.
go to
maddogandmerrill.com, scroll down to Florida. The show's in 35 states, 140 markets. And if you scroll down to Florida, and it's Sarasota area, but it airs 4 to 6 times
a week. Oh, I'll have to look for it.
Yeah. It's called Midwest Grilling, Mad Dog and Merrill's Midwest Grilling. Honest to God, you have to watch the show. We got a Fast Freddy. Is on the keyboards. You know, it's live music in and out. He plays the keyboards. He's the best ragtime music player. He grew up in Chicago, just like yourself, and he's the best ragtime music player in the world. But it's a fun little show.
So is he a Bears fan?
Freddie, as long as there's a drink involved, Freddie don't give a damn.
But Freddie
really
plays
for
him.
Yeah, like a fine addition to the team.
Freddie Freddie plays the banjo for the official Dixieland Packer band. So he strolls the Packer Stadium, Lambeau Field, before each game, paid by the Packer organization, with 4 other guys going from tailgate party to tailgate party, playing Dixieland music.
So. Yeah, the ultimate Wisconsin job.
Oh my God!
Well, even if he's a Bears fan, he won't be able to admit it.
No, exactly. Hey, Ray, thanks for spending time with us, and we do appreciate it. And you're a great guy. We're proud to say we're friends of yours, and hopefully we'll get together soon through our good friends at Louisiana Grills.
Yeah, man, great to talk to you guys. It's always a pleasure. And next time somebody cancels, give me a call.
Yeah, sounds good. We will. Peace, love.
We'll see you. Hey, thanks, Ray.
Yeah, Ray, thanks.
Ask your grocer for the sweet, thick, rich flavor of Mad Dog and Merrill's award-winning sauces, seasonings, accessories, and so much more. Or visit maddogandmerrill.com and go to the online store.
Ask your grocer for Mad Dog and Merrill.
Calling kids of all ages. Visit the world's largest Sundrop University Museum.
Tour the old streets of Shawnee.
Watch a movie on the history of Sundrop.
Watch Sundrop being bottled.
Belly up to the tasting room.
Visit the gift shop.
Drink local, be happy.
Twigsbeverage.net.
The deep waters of Argentina hosts a colony of all-natural, sushi-grade, royal red colossal shrimp. So tender and flavorful, there's only one word to describe it.
Awesome!
Fast Freddy here with my buddy Rebel from
Awesome Shrimp.
If you want that same awesome shrimp that Mad Dog and Merrill grill on the show, check out awesomeshrimp.com.
Order online or find a market near you. Awesome Shrimp and Seafood.
Hey, our name says it all.
Did you know 1 out of 8 of your neighbors face hunger every day?
We're Mad Dog and Merrill, ambassadors to Feeding America. Just $1 donated provides 4 meals to your neighbors in need.
Go to feedingamerica.org.
Well, it was a great conversation with our good friend Ray Lampe, Dr. Barbecue.
Great guy. I mean, he really just unbelievable. Great personality.
Yeah. You know, when you grow up, you know, Merrill and I have been self-employed for 40 years. He's been self-employed for, sounds like over 40 years, but almost 40 years in the barbecue industry. When you grew up self-employed, there's no ego involved. Oh. There's no, I've got this and I've done this and I'm the best in the world. It's, we're all the same in this world. We're all fighting for one thing, and that's
To survive
and just be a part, you know, just be a part. And if you do want to recognize Dr. Lampe in his younger days, and he still does, except he's losing his hair. He had like a little white hair crew cut, like a flat top crew cut all his life. Yeah. Kind of a big man. And you might have recognized him over the years, but he has been on the Food Network and Chopped, Grill Master. He's been on the NBC Food Fighters. He mentioned he was a judge, and he's been judged on the Food Network for Fire Masters, for Chopped, and for Tailgate Warriors. He's appeared in Smoke and American Grillers. He's just a great guy, a great entrepreneur, like you talked about.
Yep.
And an entrepreneur is nothing more than a pile of manure, and that's all of us.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. So.
No, just a great guy. I'm glad we had time with him.
Yeah, Google him if you would, please. And if you need, I send people, I bet you 15 times this year already when we've been on the road, someone's come up to me and asked, you know, how do I do my briskets? How do I do this? How do I do racks of ribs? Do I wrap them? I tell them and I say, you look up Dr. Barbecue, Dr. BBQ, Ray Lampe, pinpoint the book that you want earmarked for you. He's got ones on tailgating. He's got one on other ones, 9 of them total. And order that book and pick it up and take it home and slowly read it and reread it. And you'll be impressed. You know, one of the books that I had of his was one segment was on the Kamado grill. Then yeah. He talked about the charcoal grill. Then he said, but boy, if you do that on the charcoal, well, don't forget about the pellet grill. And here's how you do it on the pellet. So he covers every little angle and every little marinade, every little rub. If you want to use a rub, if you don't want to use a rub, if you want to use a barbecue sauce, don't want to use. I mean, he just, like he said, the way he talks is the way he writes.
Yeah, but he's well-versed. I mean, he knows what he's talking about, which is really fantastic.
He knows a lot of people.
Yes, he does.
That man knows a lot of people.
He does.
Yeah. Well, we know that you folks out there are grillologists of some sort. I hope you are. Everyone's a grillologist when you just sit and experiment on the grill. And I hope you enjoy the little podcast that we do. And until we meet again, peace, love, and happy grilling.
Happy grilling, everybody.